Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey and the Online Franchise Expo, the world's largest online virtual event. We had the big announcement here a couple of weeks ago from MFV Expos that the two-week event will combine four franchise expos in one and take place on October 15th through the 30th. And we at Social Geek will be right in the middle of all of the action. We're bringing together all of the biggest industry leaders and resources to be part of the most significant online event in franchising. For more information, visit onlinefranchiseexpo.com. All right, folks, the comeback of a lifetime continues, and we're speaking with marketing professionals and franchise leaders every week to see how their strategy is changing. And today I wanted to bring on Dawn Weiss. She's the owner of MarConnect Franchise Marketing and Communications. Hey, Dawn, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Since we first started chatting, I think the world has changed about, six or eight times in the past few months. Give us a little background on yourself and about MarConnect.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So I have been, just over the last few months, as you said, things have changed substantially. I've been homeschooling, even through the summer, my children's dismay. Turns out I'm really, really bad at that, so I'm not going to put that on my resume. Nobody will see that on my resume or as a website service. But I have been working with MarConnect and expanded our team to include some of the people that I've worked with over the years that are professionals in the marketing and franchise development space to help emerging franchisors as well as newly establishing and even established franchisors to adjust and meet the needs of this changing business climate. Prior to MarConnect, I've drawn a lot of my experience from having been fortunate enough to contribute to some of the nation's best known brands, including Massage Envy. Started there at 33 locations open and 83 sold, left with over 700 open and over 800 sold in about 6 years, right? So a lot of what I draw on, it's a little crazy. We were a two-person marketing department for the best part of 5 years. Yeah, I had a really great CMO there who was guiding the ship, and I was a director of brand continuity, whatever that meant. And so it was a lot of trial by fire. My first foray into franchising, as it really was for everyone on that team. And then we really... some great people came out of that, right? You've got Dave Long, who's now running Orange Theory Fitness. Mm-hmm. You've got Dave Crisali, who founded Pros. You've got so many really great people that came out of that environment. And I look back at that time and really, we didn't know what we were doing. There was a lot of throwing things up against the wall and seeing if they stuck and listening to franchisees. And the moment, and you and I talked about this previously, the moment that some of these really great franchisees came into the brand and they were largely unaware of how we were going to make this disruptive brand work, but they believed it was the right concept at the right time and it proved to be. We found out that some of them were smarter, right, than we were, right? They had some great ideas. And so I feel like my skill set that I bring to all of these brands from Massage Envy, then I went on to The Joint, where we built rapidly and had over 3,000% growth in a four-year period, really see that a lot of those underpinnings to what I bring to my clients at MarConnect, as well as what I'm putting to practice right now during this pandemic, is that there's disruption, right? I've built disruptive brands. We've acted largely as startups because we were blue ocean coming into industries that didn't quite exist, right? Or that didn't see the types of services delivered the way that we did. And so there's a lot of guesswork in it, right? You're pivoting constantly and you're waiting to see what works. You have all of these labs in franchising. I tell people, what I love so much about franchising, what makes me so passionate about it is that it's really a charmed position for a marketer like me. If you're in a large corporation, you have a budget and a single focus and many stores, and they're all sort of beating to the same drum. At the franchisor level, you have all of these labs out there and you're using franchisees' money, and they need to buy in and they need to believe and they need to execute on what you're providing. But you also have all of these little labs out there and boots on the ground and great ideas, and they take what you give them and some make it even better. And all of a sudden the next morning, we have an even better plan. We have one that's been executed in one place, and now I can take that and build a pattern around it and grow it into other areas. And so that's really what I love about that. And I feel like that's what a lot of franchisees and franchisors are struggling with right now.
I love that idea of franchisees being a lot of little laboratories out there. You know, we talk all day long about A-B testing. That's the ultimate A-B testing. Yeah. What's happening in Des Moines, Iowa versus West Des Moines, Iowa, right? And with those two franchisees. I love that concept.
Well, and I always tell franchisees also that the data isn't always the data. Franchisors who contact me to work with them, you know, I'm very data-driven, very analytically focused. I have some really great people on my team on the digital side as well who do phenomenal analysis, Kimberly Wolf being one of them. And I've worked with her, you know, previously at Amazing Lash Studio, just hyper-analytical. And that's great. That data analysis is so important. But the data is not always the data. And when you're growing, it's interesting. You see things, right, that you believe are the gospel. And, you know, as a good marketer, I can probably justify whatever data I find and fit it into, right, what my plan looked like or what it was supposed to achieve. When you're measuring those KPIs, that's really important. Obviously, I wouldn't diminish the importance of those things. But ultimately, a really strong franchisor knows to look at the data and knows that the answers aren't all there. The answers are in the conversations with the franchisees. The answers are in the listening tools that you put out there, and you're listening for the consumer feedback, right? You had a great podcast the other day around just listening tools around customer service and phone conversations and how those diminished over time, where people maybe, you know, don't get lazy, right? But don't really put in as much effort because they figure a call is coming in and there's a demand. And so they don't really follow through on all the things they need to do to continue to sell the prospect until that prospect walks in the door or makes a purchase. And I think that so much of that, you know, the data isn't always the data, really comes from the conversations that I've had with franchisees. Give you a really great example. At Amazing Lash Studio, we saw some new prospect counts dwindle in one of our locations. And we got on the phone with the regional developer, the franchise owner for that location, and they invited the studio manager, just happenstance, that she joined us. And she joined us because she was placing some of the marketing locally and some of the ads and was really struggling, and they pulled back on the spend, and the CEO asked us to hop on a call, and we hopped on a call with them and said, you know, hey, looks like you have no new prospects coming in. What's going on? And, you know, here the conversation in our office, of course, with my superiors was, hey, the marketing's not working. And I'm worried, right? How is it not working? Why is it not working? Do they have competition? The competitive landscape looked okay. The numbers looked okay. The data looked like there was no indication. We get on the phone with them and they said, well, yeah, so the problem is that we actually can't take in new prospects because we only have 50% of our stylists. And we thought, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And then we had unearthed that was very commonplace, that you would hire stylists and then they would sort of fall away after several months. And you would lose maybe 50% of your staff, and you'd have to, there was high churn. And so you think that if you're looking at the data, they're not seeing new prospects. But it was by design that they reallocated a lot of their spend and their focus because they couldn't get anybody in. They were getting calls. So when we tracked leads, leads were strong, but lead to new prospect was low. So looking at the data, you're thinking they're not converting them by the calls. You're thinking that for whatever reason, their ad spend is ineffective because they're getting people who aren't quite the right people to come in, and now they're asking questions and they are not qualified leads. That's what it looks like on paper. But the conversation was, we just don't have the staff to accommodate them. And so, you know, this is that moment in when people said, hey, we see a big spike now in April and March because now we're opening our doors back up before maybe some locations have been shut back down again during pandemic. They're measuring that through last as a comparison to last April or last May, and they're saying, look how great this is. But if you were to maybe say that your business at this time is akin to what's happening maybe during Black Friday or what's happening in your highest peak season, then how do you compare, right? They're wanting to make sure that they're recouping, right? And that they're recouping their losses from when they've been closed. But maybe you're not always looking at the right data. So again, having those conversations with franchisees, having those labs is super important because you get to really get a sense for what's working and what's not and why. And why is, of course, maybe the most important place to start.
Is that easier now or is it harder now that, you know, COVID-19, the ultimate disruptor, has entered our lives? Are some franchisees and business owners more willing to listen to your analysis of what's going on in their business, or what's that like right now?
Yeah, they definitely are. And quite frankly, I mean, there's obviously a level of desperation, right? You've tried everything else. You're not really sure what to do. And nobody has the answers, right? Here we are on the franchise side, right? Needing to, this is just a series of small businesses. My husband laughs because he has a small business and he wanted some marketing help at one point and I offered it up, which was not a good idea. I offered it up, I said, you should be on Amazon. And of course he didn't quite listen to me. That was
did you tell him he just doesn't have enough locations to afford you?
Yeah, that must be what it is. Yeah. So I come at a much, much higher price at home. But we talked and I said, you know, this is sort of where your focus needs to be. And he said, well, with all due respect, you don't really build small businesses. You build large brands. And with all due respect, I build hundreds of small businesses, not one large brand, because those hundreds of small businesses have to be swimming in the same direction. And so right now, people that reach out will ask me, you know, there is a level of desperation. They do need to understand what they can do to meet these needs with franchisees, with their consumers. But I think that they're more willing to have that conversation now because the answers really aren't in data when people aren't walking through the door. They're in conversations that you're having. They're in communications with your consumer base. They're top of mind and staying in front of them. And you need to hear what they're saying. And you need to deliver on your brand promise consistently. And this is a conversation that you and I had previously, was how important that brand conversation is and how the brand promise must be delivered consistently, even if at the time it's not something that you can deliver on as fluidly, right? Or as easily as you were before because of the pandemic.
Yeah, you mentioned your first jump into franchising was working on brand continuity, or as a director of brand continuity. And I think a lot of people see marketing right now as something that just needs to, you know, change and, you know, let's use the word pivot one more time, or it needs to evolve or get away from what we used to do. But I think, you know, am I understanding you correctly that now more than ever, you've got to keep that brand consistent and give the consumers what they're comfortable with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so it is tough, right? It's a tough landscape because you don't really know, we don't know what tomorrow holds. We just don't.
Yeah,
my husband
doesn't
like to say that, but it's true. You just don't know. We don't know what we don't know. We're offering, you know, some advisement to our clients and communication on when we're going to open. And then the governor comes in and says, that's not really going to happen. And as a brand, it's different in every pocket. Every little lab is experiencing something completely different regionally, politically. With the virus, with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, there's so much that is very different at the local level. And so I always go back to start with the why, right? Brand promise is really more vital now than ever before. If you can't know what's coming up ahead. I've honestly, it's kind of funny because I've had a crystal ball on my desk at many brands over the years, at least at Massage Envy and The Joint. And I think even in the first couple of weeks at Amazing Lash Studio, I think I might have moved it back into my home office, but I had a crystal ball. And when people would ask me questions, I would kind of look over at it, you know, and it seemed kind of funny, right? But it's anybody's guess when you're disruptive. And that's where these businesses are, right? They're startup, they're back in startup mode. They're in restartup mode is what we've identified with a lot of our clients seeking that pivot. And I don't love the word pivot, but there is, you know, some value to understanding what that really means when you're pivoting. And we've identified that really, it's projections. We've kind of taken it to an acronym for projections and profit, focusing on what your projections and your profit were and understanding you may not meet those same benchmarks now, but what can we salvage from those initial projections and how much of that is inherent in what you initially planned as for your brand? What is your mission for the brand? What is the intention of the brand? What is the consumer need? And does it still meet that need? That's really important because from all of those things that you meet, those projections can be built and profit follows, right? But not if there isn't a consistency in what their need is. And if that's shifted, you have to understand that that's where, of course, that you've got to pivot as well. Taking inventory of what it is, again, that you're offering, and again, if it is relevant right now. And if it's not, taking a look at your core visions and values and identifying that if you have to make some changes, can you stay consistent? So when I look at, you know, pivot, P-I-V-O-T, the V is always vision and values. What are your core vision and values? What's the heartbeat of your brand? And are you able to still deliver that? We also look at what are their objectives. Obviously, their objectives are to be profitable and to do well and to maintain consumers, retain, obviously, in fitness. You've got 40% of the locations. I think Yelp had put out are permanently closed, and it's terrifying, especially in the franchise world. There are many bigger brands that have been able to maintain and have made a commitment to their owners to find creative ways to service them, like Exponential Fitness has. I know that Mayweather has. They've taken things outdoors. So those are some really important things to keep your eye on. But again, to meet those objectives and to understand that your objectives are important, your consumers' objectives are more important. And that's paramount right now, is understanding that. And then also transitioning your team to meet those needs, right? So a lot of people are thinking, we've got to transition the brand and we've got to meet the needs of the consumer. And that's great. But if your brand isn't prepared for that, if your team isn't prepared to transition, when I've hired people to work with me at other brands, and I've worked with people alongside other team members even in leadership at any brand, you have to be mindful that what we're planning today could just blow up tomorrow, right? I mean, it could just, if it's disruptive, what we don't know, you know, we don't know what we don't know. So I always go back and start with the why, right? All of these brands start with the why. And right now it's, what is your why? Right? You start first with your brand, with your vision, with your mission, and then what is your current why? And is it consistent with your brand voice? Is it what you've promised? Is it what consumers have come to know? If all of a sudden tomorrow I'm telling you I'm doing something different because the landscape's changed, that's fine, but the consumer has to be ready to consume it that way and has to be on board, or I've got work to do to get them there with me. And that's where I think companies are needing to focus now.
I think the one thing that this current situation has finally taught business owners is exactly what you said, that we just don't know what's coming. For so many years, everyone just, you know, had their year-long projections and their five-year projections and things like that. And I think this has taught us that there's huge change right around the corner. And even after we get through this, something else is going to come along. It always does, right? Could be something great, could be a war, could be a tragedy, who knows? But it's never going to be just like it is today, and it's never going to be like it was a year ago. And I think most business owners and even most marketing people are finally getting to that point where they're not going to just come up with some projection of what 2021 looks like compared or based on what 2019 looked like, because you just can't compare that. And if anyone is making projections like that right now, they're lying to you, right? They're making it up. So, so I think so many of those people, have been called out, and I like the idea of having a crystal ball on your desk to kind of emphasize that no one actually knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. Between that and maybe like, I'm thinking one of my clients called the other day and they were sort of in a fun mood, right? We finally got them over a hump that they were trying to with their consumers and trying to get, retain their membership base. And we had this conversation and they were like, well, what are you thinking? You know, and they said, I think I need that crystal ball you were talking about. I'm like, I think you need like a magic eight ball, right? Like that would be the better way to go, right?
Yeah.
To make if we don't know the direction. But I think as most can attest, right, when you're pivoting through this crisis, a lot of people were left really just building the plane while flying it, right? And I think that while that sort of sense of building the plane while flying, it's one thing, you have to remember that at some point you have to land that plane and you can't build the runway while you're also in flight.
Yeah, so, I like that analogy too. The build the plane, okay, I'll give you that one. But yeah, you can't build the runway.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you need to know where you're going to land. And that's tough, right? You don't know where you're going to land, but if you know what your brand's intention is, you know, everybody kept talking about all of these things that, you know, matter politically, obviously really important conversations for us to have as a society, let alone as a business environment. But I kept kind of impressing to people that I've been speaking to in their communication, authenticity matters. If you are not authentic to your brand, if you are not delivering, everybody's like, how do we get our customers to stay? Well, stop. Don't be something you're not. If what you are not is what you're now communicating, all of a sudden you jumped on a bandwagon and you're not ready to execute on that, there's going to be trouble. I'll give you a good example. I think I did a post on this on LinkedIn several weeks back, but Drybar, one of my most very favorite brands,
sure.
Just a huge fan of Allie Webb and her team. Allie Webb posted up about Black Lives Matter and wanted to have the open the conversation about the commitment that they were making to the movement and to open the discussion. And a few of her stylists came on board and said, listen, until we provide products that service the need of people of color, And I can give to my clients in a way that I feel is comfortable for them and they don't have to bring in their own products, then you can say that all day long, but we're not really meeting that need. And immediately she swooped in, or her team swooped in and answered, let's take this conversation offline. You're absolutely right. We do need to develop that. And this is an important voice to be heard. And I thought that's that moment, right? That those labs that we talked about are not just the franchisees. They are your stylists. They are your therapists. They are your front desk people. They are the people going out and doing your grassroots marketing. They're the people who are involved with your consumers, and they are the voice. Your brand voice as a franchise, especially, or as any organization, even a smaller business, your brand voice is extended out by the people and the touch points that your consumer interacts with. And if you don't take that into consideration, you're just not going to succeed. So it was a great credit to see that people hopped on and they wanted to do something, but really the best brands prepared to do something were also the ones that were not just willing to listen, but were willing to be authentic and say, this is also part of something we've always been doing. Ben and Jerry's did a really great job with that by saying, this is how we are going to answer to the Black Lives Matters movement. And this is something we've always believed in politically, et cetera, right? So regardless of where you sit politically, they have always been a liberal political brand. They have always taken a stand for certain things that is at their core. It wasn't difficult for them to then enter a conversation. But blindly, many brands have thought they needed to jump into a conversation. And what made me crazy was listening to a lot of these different brands, and somebody contacted me and said, what do you think about what we need to say? Well, I don't think consumers were sitting around saying, you know what, I don't know if I'm going to go to that dry cleaner until I hear where they stand on right? Nobody's sitting there doing that. Until you open your mouth.
Don't worry about what you need to say this week. Let's talk about what you've been doing for the past year, you know.
Right. And if it's not what you've been doing, then that's fine. Just shut up.
Yeah. your dry bar example is a really good one. I saw so many brands come out, you know, in the past 6 weeks with, you know, the hashtag of the month. And they stumbled all over themselves and got called out for it. Before that, we saw people come out when COVID first hit with these horrible ads saying, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with you. I need to hear somebody's thoughts and prayers one more time, like I need a hole in the head, right? And before that, it, you know, the trend was whatever the, you know, date on the calendar was for National Whatever Month, let's change our logo on our Facebook profile, you know, to include a flag or a color or a rainbow or something. And I think after this entire experience, I think consumers are pretty ready to call bullshit on people who don't practice what they preach or who aren't practicing what they are telling us on social media that they're practicing.
Yeah, that's a great point. I have gone from brand to brand. I worked with a very tough PR rep at several of the brands, many of the first core brands, Massage Envy and The Joint and Amazing Lash Studio. And we were aligned around communications and the view of the brand and what we will contribute conversation to and input to on all sorts of things, right? We've had natural disasters in regions. Houston was underwater and that region suffered some time ago. They had major storms. We had the recession at Massage Envy and people wanted to talk about how is that going to affect discretionary businesses. And, you know, and you can chime in politically. And you can chime in with, we've had NRA come to us in some cases, in some jurisdictions and want support and sponsorship. And look, you want to be part of your communities. I always want my brands to be part of their communities. I want them to follow the recipe we gave them. They can add a little bit more sugar or a little bit more salt. When you replace the salt with the sugar, it's a different brand, right? we're not making pancakes, we're making spaghetti.
Yeah, there's that recipe continuity that you're lacking. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you can put your own spin on it. You want, you know, slightly different local flowers in your vase than what we normally have at a studio. That's a different thing than just, you know, not having something at all that's part of the aesthetic. So it's interesting because people had come to us and said, you know, we want you to contribute to, we want you to sponsor to. And then, you know, we had some people who were very right wing in their religious beliefs. They were very strong in their political beliefs. There are all sorts of things that were really important or very conservative in one area or another, and they wanted to contribute. And I hate to, as the bigger brand, say, no, sorry, that's not what our brand is about. We want you to contribute. We want you to do good work in the community. And yes, if you're across the street from one of the largest churches in Tennessee, then yes, you should be sponsoring and doing something with the events. But be mindful that the moment that a brand engages in political or religious conversation, you're alienating someone. And so a brand has to be agnostic in many cases. Now, not all brands. Again, the example that right from a humanitarian perspective, to recognize somebody as a human or to recognize that there's, you know, systemic racism or whatever have you at this moment in time, that's important for a brand to recognize in their practice and to not contribute to or to rectify if they've contributed. But I'm saying that the moment they start to take a side or advertise to that side or sponsor and support a side, they alienate consumers. Mm-hmm. And we don't want brands to alienate consumers. We want them to embrace and to be part of the culture in their regions and part of the conversation. But we want them to do good work, meaningful things, contribute to the betterment of the lives of their consumers, even if it's something as simple as eyelashes. And people think it's frivolous and it's vain. It's not. It's confidence building and it's an aesthetic and it makes somebody's day go faster to not have to, a woman to not have to put on makeup every day and be fresh faced and she wakes up ready to go. So I'm gym ready and then boardroom ready in a matter of minutes. So I think that again, when you start to introduce all of these other things like these brands have, you sure get in a lot of trouble. And really the crisis really, and the resulting political backlash, right? Then the mounting racial tensions that forced people, not just people, but the businesses and the brands that they manage or that they brought from them, to take a good hard look at what they believed, right? And where they stood. And that's, I think, when that pivot came. And I think that a lot of people didn't take that time to evaluate how they contribute or what part they play. They just, as you said, picked the hashtag a la mode, right? And use that one. And I think that then came backlash. And you can fool some of the people some of the time, but I would argue you can't fool most of the consumers any of the time anymore. And I think that you know this probably better than most, but from a social perspective and reputation management, it's all out there for everyone to see. You can't fool them.
Yeah, and consumers are getting smarter and smarter about your, especially your social media campaigns every day. Be careful out there, folks. Dawn, any additional advice you would give to a franchise brand who's just struggling with everything, especially, you know, let's say sort of in the middle or hopefully close to getting to the post-COVID era, any advice you would give someone who's just really struggling with their brand issues right now?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's a franchisor perspective and a franchisee perspective, right? So from a franchisor perspective, I think it's open and honest communication. I think that not enough brands, quite frankly, operate with transparency. I like to tell people that I am not always the smartest person at the table. I'm not always the one that comes with all of the answers, but I come with all of the questions and I'm coming there willing to learn. And I think franchisors really need to step into the role of franchise advocate, right? And understand too that the consumer's making the decisions now more than ever before. This isn't us telling the consumer what's good for them. Early on in the crisis and in the stages of pandemic, there was an article that Medium put out about, you know, beware, marketers are going to be playing to your weakness and trying to sell you things you don't need and don't be foolish. And I think that I was really offended by that as a marketer, because that isn't the intention. The smart marketers, I think, and the smart money is on marketing to the needs of the consumer and not on the fears of the consumer. And I think because people have all tasted what that fear actually is like firsthand, at all levels of an organization down to the consumer and as, you know, living as consumers ourselves, we're more likely to really be more focused on being part of the solution and not really taking advantage of one another. Everybody feels really taken advantage of anyway, regardless of where you sit on the political divide. But I think that the best advice from a franchisor perspective is to look at what the consumer needs are, to listen. There are listening tools out there, whether you're listening on calls, whether you are looking for information on reviews and reputation management scores and net promoter scores, and really listening to what the consumers are saying, what their needs are, engaging with where your consumers are, even if there are not places that you can spend ad dollars, understanding where they are currently spending their money and what is driving them to do business with those businesses that they are engaged with, and continually engaging with them, being honest with them. If you don't know if you're going to open in 6 weeks, it is hard to say, hey, we don't know if we're going to open. We'd like you to stay in a free status as a member. We understand, et cetera, or we want you to pay and go online and take your fitness classes online. I think that's tough, but you have to have honest conversations about what your plans are and operate, I think, with a level of transparency that some brands have not typically operated with. From a franchisee perspective, I believe that they have to challenge the franchisor to ask, are their needs being met? Do they understand what the plan is? Look, everybody that we talked about, schools, all have different plans, right? There isn't like a national plan for what we're doing with the schools. And when they're going back, and if it's online or if it's teacher assisted, whatever that might be. I think that it's fine if we all have different plans, but we have to understand what the contingency plan is, right? Everybody's talking about, here's what we're going to do. Here's your two options. That's great. So as a brand, here's your option. You can work out outside or you could work out online. We can't do indoors, and only 50% of our membership can even fit through because we have to follow. Right. So, but I think that you have to, as the franchisee, ask what happens if this isn't the case.
Yeah.
And I think that you as the franchisee also need to take responsibility to understand what the climate is locally and to understand what the local jurisdiction allows, because often franchisors are putting out blanket recommendations and they're very if-then. I feel like this is very much one of those, remember those Choose Your Own Adventure books?
Oh, Jeff? Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You used to love those, right? It was like, if the abominable snowman is chasing after you and catches you, turn to page 7, right? If you've evaded his clutches, right? Turn to page 9. That's very much where we are. If we get here to October and these businesses can't open, what's the contingency plan? and adjusting those projections. That's where, again, that pivot comes in. And the pivots become trendy and pivots become annoying and pivots become overly used. And I gave it an acronym and I thought that was fun. But the reality is that a strong business, a good business, should never get fat and happy. They should always be pivoting. They should always be planning. And both franchisee, franchisor, and really small business owners, all businesses should be expecting that the pivot is not driven simply by external, by internal factors, but by external factors.
Yeah. And there's always going to be some disruptor out there. I think that's what everyone is finally learning, that, you know, if we've gone 3 or 4 years with nothing but, the economy's been improving for the past 3.5 years or whatever, we'll just stay fat and happy and keep going along this course. Well, we haven't had a huge disruption, fortunately, in that time period. And now we got one, and then we got another one, and we'll probably have another one in the next few months. So I think not building a reaction into some written plan, but building how you respond to any disruption into your mindset. I think that's really the key for a lot of these brands.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point. I'll just tell you that, when I've talked to brands that I've interviewed with in the past, it always comes up about crisis communications, especially if they have a big name tied to their brand, or there's a concern that they're, in a space that's got some competition coming in, and they talk about, or if there's some sort of an area that I feel like might be exposed, I'll ask about the crisis communication plan, and they ask if I've done one, and of course I have, and that's all well and good. But the first question I ask is, do you have an operational crisis plan? Forget the communication. Communication comes from operations, right? No great marketing is going to come from marketing alone in a silo, but you have to understand what the implications are. And I think that's important, right? Is understanding that things change, and, truthfully, most brands were ill-prepared for either, any of the things that happened. And we're all sort of looking at the post-apocalypse bingo card and wondering what's next.
Before we go today, I did want to thank my team at Social Joey for supporting this podcast and helping our listeners, and remind everybody that if you're using software to duplicate social media posts on multiple franchisee pages, you might be in trouble. Facebook's going to get you. Also, some people are talking about syndicated or localized content in the place of really local content. It's just as bad. Find out more at socialjoey.com. Dawn, thanks so much for being here today. I hope you will come back soon and we can continue our conversation on branding, voice, pivots, and disruption. Is that a deal?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love that.
And in the meantime, if our listeners have some more questions for you, where can they reach you?
Yeah, they can reach us at marconnect.com. That's MARKONNECT.com.
Awesome. We'll have a link to that in the show notes so people can find you easily. Thanks for being here, and we'll chat again down the road.
Great. Thanks so much. Take care.
And thanks to everyone for listening to Social Geek Radio. We're here to help you get yourself ready for your comeback of a lifetime. Copyright 2020 Social Geek Enterprises, Inc.